Thank you for joining the call today, which is for JPMorgan Equity High Touch clients of Research Advisory or MiFID out of scope clients. The call is for institutional investors only. Therefore, if you are a corporate client or a member of press, please kindly disconnect from the call. I'll now pass you over to the JPMorgan host of the event, Celine Pannuti.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning. Thank you everyone for joining me today. I am Celine Pannuti and I head the Consumer Staples Research at JPMorgan in Europe. It's my pleasure today to be at Danone headquarters with Antoine de Saint-Affrique. You, Antoine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Antoine, thank you so much for the opportunity to have a chat for the next 50 minutes. Especially a discussion on the heels of a very good set of results in Q3. During that, you not only had a solid performance, but you raised your guide of 6 to 7% top line growth for the year. At the same time, you talk about renewed Danone yielding results as a strategy. So maybe let's start here. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more, I mean, if you could sum up what renewed Danone is about? And why? What are the evidence that you see that the strategy is on track?
Well, if you look at Renew Danone, which we launched about 18 months ago, it is about a number of very clear building blocks, and you can, in some ways, boil down what we had announced in about three big pillars. I mean, the first one is when we told you, well, there is about 25% of underperformers, 20% of our winners, and the rest of the core, and just making sure that we are taking care of each of the building blocks in their own right. With a view that was very clear, one, be very transparent on what works and what doesn't work, and second, give a very clear roadmap internally as well on what needs to be done, pulling a spade, facing to the reality, and solving what needed to be solved. The second pillar of Renew Danone is obviously the strategy with the four blocks of winning where we are, expand where we should be, see the future, and rotate the portfolio with the four enablers. And there too, when we announced that, we had two things in mind. One is lay out a vision to the market, to say, well, this is what we are going to be doing in a very consistent way, in a way that is simple but not simplistic, but also with a target internally, which was giving a common and very clear frame within the company and very clear set of priorities on which to execute. And we see the third pillar of the guidance, which is as much a guidance on business model than it is a guidance on our numbers. So it's one that is growth, and growth that is quality, which enables us to grow the bottom line faster than the top line, with a number of commitments on ROIC and dividend. So that is what we put out at the time of Renew Danone. What we have been doing, and it started before we announced to the market, but what we have been doing over the last almost 2 years is a number of things. One is very, very significant changes when it comes to governance and when it comes to management. As you know, in about 18 months, the entire board has been renewed with a board that is of extremely high quality, very diverse, very independent, a large number of CEOs, or people with huge credentials in very relevant fields, be it sustainability with Liz Kingo, or be it Asia with Sanjeev Mehta, be it science with Suzanne. So an extremely strong and independent board. We made some very significant changes, although we didn't necessarily advertise them when it comes to management. Started by bringing world-class players in R&I, bringing world-class player in operations, so bringing a different level of focus on things that were critical, upgrading a number of regional presidents, and starting to move forward with a team which has been set up. And then it has been about it's always consistent delivery with a focus on execution. Hence the time I'm spending all the time in the field. I'm today in Germany. I'm starting, I think, my eighth rotation on 90 days, which is helping shaping the culture. And I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point. And getting into consistent execution. What you've seen in the quarter three results is first the continuation of consistency over, I think, about 7 quarters now. The second thing is consistent progress in what we are doing, a sequential improvement of volume mix, with a number of the places where we have been challenged starting to come on stream. You see the turnaround of MyZone, you see EDP Europe going in the right direction, and with action on the rotation of the portfolio. So delivering on the various blocks of our renewed ANA, doing it step by step in a way that is serious, in a way that is progressive, so that we are building strong foundations for them.
So well, thank you for this. We will go into discussing the different points you mentioned on the building blocks for some of those businesses. But first, just to bounce back on what you said about management change and culture change, there has been a lot happened in the past 18 months. And I remember when you presented the Renewed ANA, you talked about cultural reset. So could you explain to us what exactly happened within the organization and how you came about to making those changes?
So the cultural reset is in many different ways. I told you, I think, the first time we met, the thing that surprised me positively the most when I joined over 2 years ago in Dalian was the absolute passion of the Dalian. A team of people at all levels in the organization that had been going through a massive turmoil and were still extraordinarily committed to the success of the company, going the extra mile in what was a very turbulent environment. The side of it, obviously, is for all kinds of reasons. We were extremely inward focused. We were focused about the crisis of governance. We were focused about the challenges the company was facing internally. And so, together with the clarity of Renewed ANA, a very clear roadmap with very clear sets of priorities, we put the focus of the company back onto winning outside. And back on winning outside goes with a number of things. Well, the way you incentivize people. So bringing TSR back into the loop, bringing ROIC back into the equation. The way discuss performance. I restarted every executive committee when I joined. When we start discussing safety, because safety is a good indicator of the health of a company. But then the next thing that you discuss is the market shares. Are you competitive or not? What do you do about that? And what we did as well is get into a 90-day cycle, where every 90 days, with Jürgen, who is the CFO, and the relevant regional leaders, be it Veronique or be it Shane, we go across each and every of the regions to discuss business. Actually, I'm today in Germany, at the end of the week in Mexico, or in 2 weeks' time in Asia. Every 90 days, you go and discuss the state of the business. And as you do that, time after time after time, you get people into a rhythm where, number one, you discuss their issues. Number two, you set a tone to the conversation where you reward people for bringing the issues on the table and for working together and solving them. But you certainly hold people to account on their performance, but also on not bringing the issues to the table. To get into a radically different rhythm to the company every 90 days, but also you infuse the culture. You infuse a culture whereby you have to win in the stores. So every time I'm visiting the stores, grow your talent base. Every time I'm meeting with our young talents, and you discuss business, because you should discuss business constantly, and you do that on short cycle. Well, step by step, you improve the performance. And in the places where you didn't have either the right capabilities or the right performance, well, you bring talents from the outside when it's a matter of capabilities, or you grow talents from the inside when it's a matter of performance. You can also bring people from the outside. So there is a building block of rewards and performance culture. There is the way you manage the company, and there is the talents you're putting around the table.
In a way, when I think about Renew Danone, clearly you said you were focusing about market share. There's a lot of insight that you need to do in order to get the performance outside the organization going through. At the same time, I think the most challenging conversation I have with investors is really to be excited about the growth opportunity at Danone. For many investors, they see what you do, but as well, they see a portfolio that potentially is more commoditized, where there is a less underlying growth. So, you know, we've been now more than 2 years in the organization, you visit the businesses. How, you know, what is your view on that growth opportunity for Danone? If you can obviously give us a number, what you think growth rate is, but how you create value in this category?
Well, I am very excited by the growth opportunity. I think I said that already at Renew. If you look back in pre-inflation at the average growth of our categories were growing 3-4%. We were simply losing market share, so we weren't capturing the full potential of growth of our categories. So step number one is making sure that we do capture the full potential of growth of our categories. I mean, we have been eroding in some categories volumes, and we have been eroding market shares for a long, long time. So there is a first layer, which is gaining back or reclaiming that competitiveness and growing with categories that are exciting categories. By the way, some of those categories, we are the categories. We are the inventors of the categories. We still command very strong market shares. So part of the growth of the categories is our making. Market development is fundamental. When and I took the example, I think last time we spoke, when you are in Spain, when you created the category of yogurt in Spain, where you still command a very sizable market share in Spain, it's not about the market. It is about your ability to remain relevant, to feed the market, to develop the market. So I think step number one, and this is the core and the base of Renew Danone, is regain that competitiveness, grow at the speed of the market, but also reignite our markets where we are market leaders, where we comment the market growth. Step number two is leverage all the strengths we have. Some of you have been exposed to what we do in research and development. We have really exciting things in the pipeline, and we have really exciting consumer opportunities. I mean, let me just quote three as an example. I mean, the first thing is, you see everywhere now that guts and gut health, guts are the second brain, and gut health is commanding a large part of your current and your future health. Well, guess what? I mean, Danone is born in gut health. This is what your work was all about. This is what the ferments we have are all about. We have an incredible expertise in our biotics, prebiotics, postbiotics. So there is a universe where there is a convergence between the fundamental consumer trends and the science we have. Or you take just the demographics. I mean, population is aging, and with the aging of population, you have a very significant increase of the occurrence of oncology treatments and cancer. Guess what? We have, with our adult medical nutrition, an extraordinary tool, and we are only at the start of the journey with our adult medical nutrition. I could talk about, water. I mean, in times of crisis, people are rediscovering that not all water is born equal, that in some places you won't have access to safe water. In some other places, water is not as good as you would like it to be. Well, this gives you a fantastic opportunity. So there are real opportunities that are driven by some of the underlying of the markets, but a lot also by the science we have and what we have from a pure R&I standpoint, underpinned by brands that are extremely strong. So I am certainly optimistic when it comes to our growth prospects.
And I think, you know, one of the key focus of the market has been how this is being put in example in Europe, which has been the historical base of Danone, but as well the most challenged in the past couple of years. And I think, so you mentioned about you are doing this portfolio SKU rationalization. I think on what you were just mentioning, balancing as well the innovation at higher price points, create mix and value added, but as well tackling the value opportunity. So can you talk about, now you are in Germany today, I think last Friday we saw some Nielsen data which showed positive volume growth. So can you talk about, your confidence that the plan is on track? When are we going to see volume turning around, and how do you feel about Europe overall in dairy?
Well, I think we said it, and Jürgen said it very well in the quarter three results. We expect the company to cross into positive volume mix in quarter four. I mean, the example of what we do with EDP Europe is probably a great example of tackling a problem in a very structural way and seeing the impact of the work that you are doing starting to yield results. I mean, the first thing is you face the reality. And the reality we are facing in Europe when it comes to EDP, and in particular in dairy, was a proliferation of brands, a proliferation of naming of brands, a proliferation of subscale innovation, and a total entirety when it comes to our segmentation in swim lanes. So what you do and what we have been doing is you relook at your portfolio and you do the job of segmentation. And you segment by benefit, you segment by price point and by format. And you structure your portfolio in such a way that it covers the entire piano of benefits, also the entire piano of price range. But in a way where you have very clear swim lanes, in a way where the role of each brand is active, and in a way where you're not overlapping. And this drives to fundamental simplification of the portfolio. I mean, in Spain, I think we have almost half the number of brands or brand expression that we were having. By the way, one of the consequences of that is if you move from 10 plus brands to 5 brands, is what is left. You can have more focus, you can support it in a better way. By the way, you have less non-working media and more working media, so simplicity is yielding results. And the second thing you do when it comes to simplicity is you prune your portfolio. I think in Europe, when it comes to EDP, we've pruned about 20% of our schemes, which is not small numbers. There are consequences of that. I mean, obviously, at the time when you do that, you take a dip in volume. But what you are doing actually is you are creating a condition for growth that is of a different nature. So a growth that is much healthier, and it's back to swim lanes and positioning. And then you start, investing. And what you see right now in Europe, and I was obviously very happy with the shares we all got on Friday. You see a sequential improvement of the volume mix. You see the shares progressively going into the right direction on a portfolio that is much clearer. And where, by the way, you tackle all the price points. I mean, what we've done in Spain is obviously you have an Actimel or you have a Danacol that are tackling the higher end of the market with very, very strong benefits that are very, very clearly expressed. But you reaffirm also the role that Danone yogurt has. And by the way, Danone is not a yogurt, it's a Danone because of the ferments, because of its unicity, because of what it does to you. But with whom you come with an entry price. So you compete at the more affordable end of the market. By the way, still claiming the benefits of your product. So it's not only a price game, it's also an equity game. And if you do that properly, you get what we've seen in Spain, which is an increase of penetration. And a restart of the market. So very clear swim lanes, simplified our range, more investment behind our fewer things with a clear price positioning, and you see sequentially the things improving. That's not something you do, by the way, like that in about 2 minutes. If you want it to stick, you do it step by step by step in a very, very consistent way. So that it is transformational. That's what we did, 3 years ago now in the US. That is what we are doing at scale in Europe. And yes, the results are encouraging.
Maybe just to finish off on EDP, and I want to bounce back on what you said about the US, you're right, which was used as the starting point or the format that you then developed in Europe. But if I could push you a bit, I see that the high protein is doing very well, Oikos, fantastic delivery, but some of the other brands are a bit lagging behind. So we wouldn't want to be neither in a situation where you have one winner and then the other one like tagging along. So is that fair, unfair, and how do you think you should address that portfolio have to work all together?
Well, I mean, the first thing is if you look at the overall trend and results of EDP US, performance has been consistently good. It started much earlier. I mean, it is normalizing. Also the comparisons are of different nature. But the portfolio altogether is doing rather well. It's true for Oikos. It's true also for Beverage Creations. It's true for a number of sovereigns. There are places where we've probably taken too much price increase. And there we had to adjust. I mean, I mentioned in one of the last calls the case of Danimals, where we have been a bit overboard in pricing. We have started correcting. We start seeing the results. Fact is also, in a large portfolio, you will always have one part of the portfolio that was doing well, which you need to reflect on the new, which is why we are entering in a much more disciplined approach also of rejuvenation and big long. So back in some ways to what is the basics of consumer goods, which is every 3 years you do rejuvenation. In between, you have innovation, and you get into that. That cycle.
Maybe switching gears. One of the areas which I think surprised me positively in Q3 was the strength of the Chinese business, and in an environment where a lot of corporates have been quite disappointed about the rate of growth in China. Infant milk formula specifically in China, I think, is about 15% of your profit. And we've seen that the birth rate, unfortunately, have disappointed even post the reopening in China. At the same time, we also see potential changes in the way consumers in China look at price point and whether effectively with the high unemployment, we could see a bit more of a value for money tax. Now, just coming back on what it means for infant milk formula, I mean, it has been a business that thrived thanks to premiumization. Do you still see that as an opportunity, or could you see a risk that people are looking for more value for money all the time? And then can you talk about your market share opportunity in an environment where I feel the growth in volume terms is not going to be very exciting?
So let me first step back and look at the entire Chinese business, because altogether it's a very exciting business. Obviously, we have infant milk formula. I'll get back to that in a second. Next to it, we have everything that is pediatrics, very important. And all the more important that, as you all know, allergies are on the up. We have adult medical, and we are the leaders in tube filling in China, and we're expanding our ranges, growing very fast, same types of margin as IMF. And we have Mizone, extremely happy with last year in Mizone, gaining shares again, growing double digits, lower margin than the average of China, but accretive to the rest of them. So the reality is we have a portfolio that goes way beyond IMF, and we have been working very consistently at the resilience of the portfolio, growing the pediatric specialties, growing the adult medical nutrition, making sure that we are turning around Mizone. Once you've said that, our IMF portfolio keeps going from strength to strength. The demographics are very clear. I mean, the number of babies has gone down. It will probably go down, or it will stabilize. It will stabilize probably over the course of the coming years. I mean, one of our competitors was very bullish about next year because it's the year of diamond. I'm not sure that I'm as optimistic, but I mean, we have a model that we have been sharing very openly, and we are pretty confident in our model. Within that model, premiumization, well, number one, we are not the most expensive in the market. Actually, some of our Chinese competitors are more expensive. Number two, we have a very clear benefit and technology-driven approach to our segmentation. In a market where our mothers, that generally have only one child, are extraordinarily, extraordinarily aware of science, going extremely deep into the benefits, and being very clear that if there is one thing on which they will not trade off, is everything that pertains to the health of their kids. And there we have an amazing portfolio. We have also amazing science, by the way, some of which is based in China. So we built on that science. That's the base from which we start. We started, by the way, as a digital company, which is extremely relevant in China. What you see today with the renewal of the licenses is our consolidation happening in the market. You have, I don't know if it's 700 or 800 players, and the name of the game with the licenses is to shrink the numbers of our players in the market. Well, we come out strong out of the renewal of the licenses with innovations that are starting to hit the market in quarter four this year, allowing us, by the way, to play not only where we play today, but in super premium, where we are not playing before. So a portfolio that is enlarging with more innovation coming to the market. That's the first thing that is helping our growth. The second thing, and you were talking about market shares and our consolidation, there is a consolidation game that is taking place in China. There is also a penetration game that is taking place in China. Consolidation are with the smaller players, which by the way are very often the ones that are playing tier 3 and tier 4 cities or lower tier cities, which is the place where so far we didn't have our best market shares. Okay, great opportunity to go there, consolidate the market there, to to drive the penetration there. By the way, in our lower tier cities, the price structure of the market is actually more premium than it is in tier one and tier two cities. So the place where we are going for further expansion and our consolidation is actually a place where there is also opportunities to deploy our portfolio as it is. So all in all, very confident with our IMF portfolio in China. It shows the results in a very, very consistent way. No?
Maybe if we can follow up on pediatrics, which you mentioned for China, that's high growth. Can you talk overall, I think pediatrics, around 40% of your total FN business. What kind of growth rate do you see, and is it coming just from China? Like, can you talk about as well the opportunity in other regions and the profitability that's maybe differentiated from the rest of the portfolio?
So 40% of our SN portfolio is a mix of is medical products. So it's pediatrics, but it's also adult medical nutrition. So it goes from products for kids that are challenged in terms of growth to metabolic product to tube feeding. By the way, we have a pharma license in China. Two products that are helping oncology patients, to products that are helping aging people that have either problem of frailty or problem of cicatrization. So a whole range of medical products. This whole range accounts, as you said, for about 40% of our total SM, with margins that are equivalent to IMF. So it's at the level of the rest of the category, growing very nicely. I mean, in China, our medical portfolio is growing actually faster than our IMF portfolio. Interestingly, as well, in China, it's lower than the 40% that you have in the average of the world. So it is an opportunity, and it brings to the resilience of the Chinese portfolio. If you look at that portfolio of medical nutrition, it is a very interesting one. It's one that is absolutely grounded in science. It is one, by the way, where you see the expression of our knowledge and our science traveling from category to category and traveling from the consumer goods categories to the more medical one and vice versa. If you talk about the oncology products, I mean, when you are under oncology treatment, absorbing food is very difficult because generally your taste buds are burnt, you don't have saliva. So the sheer fact of eating is very difficult. So what you need pre-surgery, post-surgery, and during radio or chemotherapy is a food that is as concentrated as possible, delivers you everything you need in a way that is as easy and as pleasant as possible in the circumstances. It's very clear, by the way, that if you take that kind of food, it has an impact on your recovery, which has itself an economic impact. So we have a whole range of products under the brand 40ml, which provides you within in the form of a shot, everything you need to complement your alimentation and make sure that you are in the best possible shape to withstand the treatments. Two things that are interesting in that, besides the fact that we are helping to save life every day. One is part of those products are all about concentrating protein, okay? And concentrating protein in a way where it's still palatable from a taste and from a texture standpoint. Well, it's no different. Well, it is different, but it's no different from what you see in Hagpo or Yopro. It's not only, by the way, about concentrating protein, but making sure that not only you have a large amount of protein, but the intake of the protein and the impact on the body is very important. That travels all the time between the various categories. So if you take taste with with Danone, with what we do in water, we develop incredible knowledge of taste. Well, you then apply it back into the medical product to make sure that the medical products are as palatable as possible, because if you are compliant and taste helps compliance, your chances of recovery are bigger. So you're literally things traveling across. And that's why, by the way, R&I is such an important pillar in what we do and in Renew Denim.
Another category that is seen as well in the same vein as a healthy nutrition, but healthy is hydration, water. It's a business that has been quite impacted by the COVID situation, but now with all countries back to fully reopen. We've not yet seen, nevertheless, the business back to its heydays. So what do you think is the opportunity of that category? I remember mid-single-digit plus organic growth, low teens margin. Where are we on that journey to recover this kind of dynamics?
Well, if you look at our portfolio of beverages, basically three pillars. You have Mizone in China. And as I told you, we're very encouraged with this year when we started getting shares again, where we are in our double digits growth. You have water in unsafe water countries. It's essentially Mexico and Indonesia, where we have a very, very nice business. It's a mix of on-the-go and in-home delivery. And then we have our premium waters in essentially Europe. You've seen that we have been gaining market shares again when it comes to water. So our performance is going in the right direction. We are starting to innovate again. And you probably have seen on Evian, and Evian is going very well, but you've seen what we do with our Evian Sparkling. It is also a category where you start building channel resilience of your company. It's a category where obviously, in some cases, you distribute in mass retail. It's a category that gives us an access in way from home. And there, the brands like Evian or Benoit in France are extremely strong assets. And as I said, in places like Indonesia and Mexico, it is also direct delivery with everything that comes with direct delivery. So good positive momentum. We are still working on improving our margins to get back towards stronger margins. But the momentum is going really in the right direction. You see it with the altogether with the overall market shares and with the turnaround of Mizone for that matter.
Antoine, at the beginning you mentioned the pillar of the Renew strategy, and one of the key action points was to fix the underperformer. And at the time last year you had shown around 25% of your portfolio was there. I would like to understand where we are on that journey. It seems to have been a rather slow change. So could you tackle that? Obviously, unfortunately, I would say the Russian operation have been taken over by the Russian state. But like beyond that, it feels like there's not been a lot happening on that front. And then if I may add on this, I don't think that plant-based was part of the 25%, but I would like to question whether it should be part of that 25%. Because we've seen the underperformance has been there for quite some quarters now. It's been a tough market as well in the US. And I wonder whether, since you have exited liquid milk in dairy, do you think you are the right owner of doing milk, even if it's plant-based? And if you think so, then what can be done to turn around this business?
So many questions in one go. So listen, Darren, the first thing is I don't think they're going slow. They're going in a very methodical way. You take Mizone. Yeah, it took us 1 year or a year and a half to turn it around, but it is now starting to show results. You take EDP Europe, which was a challenge we discussed, it is starting to move. rotation of the portfolio. Well, obviously, now Russia is, out of our perimeter. We are making very good progress when it comes to our milk or organic milk in the US. And we've done lots of things that are not seen because we didn't have them. But we stopped milk and water actually in Brazil. We deconsolidated our waters in Argentina. So we have been very, very methodical in the rotating our portfolio. And if you do the math, we are probably close to the 10% now, which by the way doesn't mean we're gonna stop. We're gonna keep managing our portfolio. So rotation of the portfolio we are progressing on track. We bought also a few smaller businesses, like a service business that is linked to trading in Poland. So we are very systematic, but same story, we are doing it in a proper way. So finding the way that is the most value creating for the company, and doing it in a way where we can derive the best possible value for the company. Some of the things that need a turnaround, talked about Mizone, talked about EDP, you do them taking the time to do things properly. And you don't turn around 10 years of volume decline in EDP Europe in a quarter. You can do it in a quarter, but it's not going to stick. We are trying to do things in a methodical way so that they are sticking. When you talk to plant-based beverages in the US, which was your second question, fundamentally, two things. Well, first, at large, we are not doing bad at all with plant-based beverage. Alpro is doing super nicely in Europe. What is important as well is we are profitable with plant-based beverage. So we are managing a business that is making sense also from a bottom line standpoint. Specifically to plant-based in the US, one or two things. One is over the last 6 months, we had a competitor that was tough because we had a competitor that wasn't in the market a year ago, so we are paying for some of it. We made some mistakes very clearly, which was we increased the price too much. So there, we are correcting, and we are correcting in a number of different ways. We are correcting by having some price rollback, but we are also re-looking at which are the formats that we are missing to make sure that we are entering in the various formats that that we are missing. We will work also onto the next relaunch of plant-based. In the US, do I think that the comparison between plant-based and milk is relevant? No, I don't think it is. It's a different type of market. You've heard me say that we are in the process and we need to move from ingredient-based to benefits-based. And you've probably seen some example of that in the UK already, both in what we do in Alvabon. I think we are now in the top four coffee chains in the UK. And if you go, you probably will get an invite to have your Alpocino to look at bringing added value. We are starting to look at partnering with key moments. So we partner in some countries with Kellogg's on breakfast. We reaffirm the thing that our plants are different, and it's not different because it's not milk, but it's different because it brings a concrete benefit. So I don't agree that milk and plant-based are the same, for sure. We're quite happy with our business in Europe. We face some challenge in the US, which we address topically with our price and formats, and we have a relaunch in the works.
I would like to go back to a price discussion. I think there's been a quite difficult summer, politicians, retailers have all been talking about the need for price cuts. And in the past, effectively, the Danone portfolio had seen price cuts, so that has made the market, financial market, a bit more wary about the risk to price cuts in your business. Can you talk about where you think pricing is going ahead?
Couple of things. Let me start with one point that is very important. I'll come to your disinflation right after. We said that we would reinvest behind our brands. And if you look since the beginning of Renew-Danone, where the volume trend, you had massive instability, massive inflation, whatever happened, we reinvested behind our brands, behind our capabilities, which was not also necessarily the tradition of Danone. So we have been consistently walking the talk despite the external environment. Now to your question on our pricing and inflation. There is no deflation, let's be clear. There is disinflation, meaning the quantum of inflation is reducing. And if you look at the last numbers, whether it's 3%, whether it's 5%, you still see inflation coming through. And while some of the raw materials are going down, you see our salaries in a number of countries going up. You see also an extreme volatility when it comes to some raw material. You just have to look at the oil price in the last couple of weeks that have been playing yo-yo. So I think there will be a quantum of inflation that will remain. The make of the growth moving forward needs to have a different, and will have a different balance between the price component and the volume and the volume mix component. And this will be a result of a world where the quantum of inflation is going down, and where the growth needs to have a different make. Discussions with retailers are never easy, but I've been in the trade for now over 30 years, or 35 actually. It's never easy, but the name of the game, and that's why you invest behind brands, that's why you invest behind science, the name of the game is to create jointly value with the trade. So moving from a price discussion to a value discussion, how do we create what they call mass demand together? How do we create value for the consumer? How do we drive growth for our categories? That's the name of the game, and that's what we are trying to do.
So just to recap what you said, no deflation, disinflation, so we should look for positive pricing. And once the volume has crossed the positive level in Q4, then we should see a positive volume and positive price next year. That's how we would balance the equation.
Yeah, you should have a mix of positive volume mix and positive pricing. And there will be a component of both in a world where you have disinflation.
Excellent. Two more questions. So one on the profitability and the other one on CSR, which is very important. But first on profitability. So you mentioned your reinvestment capability or your ambitions to reinvest. So maybe if you can put some color on that, the gross margin progression that you see and how fast you see that coming and how you will balance delivering on the reinvestment, but as well as delivering on the EBIT expansion. And I also remember at the time of the Renew-Danone, you mentioned that all the categories needed to pull their weight to participate to total growth. So how confident now that you operate EDP Waters and what we discussed, you think they can as well participate to that profit growth at Danone?
I mean, the first thing is, and the guidance we have given is the guidance. We expect the profit to grow faster than the top line. Which means, by the way, a regular progression on the profit, and more recently we spoke about modest increase of the profitability, and that's what we want to stick to. And we want to stick to that for a number of reasons. One is we need to keep reinvesting step after step after step in our brands. We are in a long-term model. We are in a model where regularity of the cash flows, regularity of an increase of the profit on the base of a quality growth underpinned by our investment behind our brands is creating our value for the long term. So if you want a discounted cash flow model, we need step by step, and don't give guidance on that, we need to keep moving our gross margin step by step upwards as a result of the way we work our mix and volumes coming back into our factories, giving us our leverage. This enabling our reinvestments behind our brands while making sure that we have proper leverage at the bottom line. Could we think of the company being at some point at a point that there will not be a mid-teens profitability company? Yes. But in increments, step by step, over the long term, because the name of the game is to do something that is very, very solid for the long term, where we build a company where regularity and predictability is the name of the game. And as part of that, obviously, all of the categories have to play their role. Not all the same role, by the way. Not all at the same time, because in every business, things that are working slightly better one year, slightly better the other. But the general direction should be one of consistency with all the categories playing their part.
And so, as we round up this whole discussion, coming back to what you said at the beginning, how you incentivize management, and TSR is a key component to that. We've seen in the past months a new strategy emerging from some of the food and beverage companies here in Europe. And there's a lot of focus at being top TSR and a lot of LTIP moving into that direction. So I would like to understand, and some of your peers have not very dissimilar targets in terms of top line or progressive margin expansion. On top, they may have balance sheet that allows them to do share buyback. So I would like to understand, what do you think will differentiate Danone to be able to be a top TSR performer, and how you feel about the balance sheet, given that you are probably a bit higher leverage, that will not allow you to supplement maybe through inorganic growth or share buyback. So really understanding what is the secret sauce at Danone.
Well, I mean, you need to get back to the guidance we've given, which is a regular increase of the profit, which is a step-by-step improvement of the ROIC, and which is about dividend. By the way, the dividend yield is very good, which is equal or superior. So you have that regularity within Danone. If you look at that, if you look at the potential of our valuation of Danone, if you look at the regularity of the delivery, well, I'll let you do the math, but it's pretty straightforward. On to your question on what do we do with capital allocation, and what could be the relationship between capital allocation and TSR. You said it rightly. We still have a high level of debt, so our priority is obviously deleveraging the company and getting to a better level of leverage, especially in the world of high interest rates. We will be, and we started with very small, we'll be doing bolt-on acquisition. We are committed to the dividend. We committed into the guidance. While I'm not out of principle excluding share buyback, that is not a priority, certainly for the short term.
Thank you so much, Antoine, for this very insightful discussion. Good luck with your trip. It's going to be quite intense. And looking forward to hear further on the volume performance in 2024.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon anyway.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.